Hi.
This week, I've been thinking about what it means to do a life and living a life in preparation. What is it that I prepare for? How do I do that? And how does it manifest itself in my life? And it strikes me that this process is something that we're all familiar with, whether we're good at preparing for life or not. Like we have all have had to prepare for something at all stages of life, right? Even as a creature in your mother's womb, right? Yes or yes, you had to prepare for the development of life. And then at one point, there's a moment where you're like, this is it. We're exiting our home for the last 9 months, right? And then on the other side of that exit, somebody has been preparing for the arrival of a newborn baby. So all of our life, we have preparation. It's happening all around us. You guys prepared to come to this worship service and this community today, and then even our little ones start to gather the rhythm of life, of what it means to be here on the weekend. We have a little one, her name is Lucy. She is the little one of Yenny, who usually sits over here. And she says to Yenny on some mornings, and she goes, yeah, today we're gonna go see little Jesus first, and then we're gonna go see big Jesus second, right? And just some context, little Jesus is Sabbath school, big Jesus is the worship service, all right? But if you see Lucy, like, she's in it, she knows, she's ready for the Sabbath to come, right? And, you know, chances are that as you prepared your time to sit in this space, you probably already prepared for what you're going to do next, right? Some of you guys are just like, I'm ready for lunch. Like, I was ready for lunch at breakfast. That's me. I'm with you, right? So you guys know where you're going to eat and what you're going to eat, right? And some of you guys are living on the wild side. You're like, I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to have tacos. I don't know if I'm going to have enchiladas. I'm not there yet, right? You're living on the wild side. But for the most part, we all know that we're preparing for something, right? And some of you guys are so committed to those plans that you're going to get up and you're going to leave early. Is it awkward now? Now you're going to look at whoever gets up and you're going to be like, oh, I wonder what's for lunch, right? We're not going to judge you. We're going to pray for you. But so we do this thing of life and preparing, and then the things that we prepare for, those things are important to us, and so we commit to the things that we prepare for because they're our priorities, right? So we're preparing for, like, weddings. We've got a ton of weddings that are going to just fill this space in the next several months, and one of them is Regina and Carlisle. Hi, guys. They don't know that I was going to call them out. They're totally embarrassed, especially Regina. So Regina Carlisle, they're preparing for a wedding, right? Our Mandy and her Joe, yeah, there's going to be a wedding in December. And then our old friend, but very good friend, Austin Nystrom, is going to be marrying Linda. And I'm helping them prepare because I'm one of the people that gets to officiate their ceremony. So there's a ton of preparation that goes into these meaningful parts of our lives, right? And as you know, a part of our rhythm of life and preparation around here for us is 4 days with Jesus, right? So we know if you haven't put it in your plans already, you heard it in the announcements, that is coming hot to you, March 29 through April 1. Bring your people to this. It's a brilliant experience you don't want to miss. Lots of good and hard work happening. We've been preparing for this for a long time. Lots of good stuff. It's our priority. So we plan for stuff like this, right? We plan for vacations. We plan for birthday parties, anniversaries, the whole nine yards, everything, right? And then there's also these categories in our lives that we have to plan for, that we have to plan for when they come at us, and not necessarily the most exciting things to prepare for, but when they're in our space, we have to deal with them and we have to prepare for them then. So some of these things are like funerals, both whether it's for people or for the fluffy creatures in our life that make family for you. We have to figure out how to prepare for losses of relationships, divorce, all sorts of different things. Unexpected diagnoses from the doctor, right? There's supernatural disasters in our community. I mean, when life comes to us, we try to do our best to prepare for them, and yet there are some things like these other categories that happen in our lives, and no matter how much you try to prepare for, it's just never quite easy. And the pastoral staff has done some of this life with some of you, and you get news that was unexpected, and We don't even know. You know, we have moments where we go, nothing, no degree prepares you for the kind of life that sometimes comes to our doorstep. But as I wondered this week, I wondered how it was that John felt as he sat, one of the disciples sitting at the table with Jesus. I wonder what it was like for him to sit there and to have felt all of his commitment in life now in this one significant moment. And I imagine that John, as he was sitting in the company of the other disciples, of which, I mean, they have probably all have had meals together. I mean, at this point in their relationship together, they have probably have had a lot of sit-down meals together, right? And most of the disciples, obviously, at this point in time, they were all probably good Jewish men, and so they were well acquainted with the customs and practices of this Passover meal that they were going to be engaging in. And there's going to be food, there's going to be prayer, and there's going to be something significant to help them remember their the long line of ancestors and their incredible journey from slavery to freedom, okay? And yet there they sat in this room, and there was something different about this space and this time, and this meal was different. And although Jesus had talked a lot about this quite significantly before, of a time when his space and time with these people was going to be closing, the disciples, I imagine, even as they were getting ready for this farewell, I don't think it sunk in yet. I don't think that they realized the magnitude of what was going to follow this mealtime. And it's difficult to know fully what John of Zebedee experience was prior to this moment. Because, I mean, we can trace back a few things, significant moments in the life of the disciples, and in particular, the life of John. But in the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, there really isn't much said about John. Like, he's not the shining star. There's a few things, and a few things that are prominent. We know that he is a fisherman, okay? And we know that he is brothers with James, that Pastor Vadim talked about a while ago. And we know that in particular, he was partners in business as a fisherman with one of the other disciples, likely Peter, right? And so that helps us kind of understand a little bit where he was at. He was not in poverty, right? But he was not the richest of the rich, but he was doing well. So at the time when he got called from Jesus, he had a good thing going in his life. He had a lot of responsibilities. You know, but John hardly talks. He doesn't really have a ton of dialogue in the Gospels, in fact. And the few times that he does talk are kind of these interesting moments for me where I'm like, he's kind of leaning in to try to like be the disciple that he's longed to be for Jesus. And then he doesn't always make it. You know, he kind of is like, okay, you did really good. In chapter 9, there is an incident and a moment where he is reporting to Jesus that a group of people, and I imagine that John is proud of this, like, Jesus, we got there and we did the thing. And he shows up and he's telling Jesus that a group of the disciples shooed away someone because they were casting out demons in the name of Jesus, but they weren't a part of the group. You remember this story. Pastor Chris talked about this several weeks ago, right? And I imagine that he's telling Jesus this, you know, and they were trying to do this thing in the name of Jesus, but we were like, you're not one of us. So we sent him away. And I think Jesus kind of looked at him like, yeah, you know, yeah, you were kind of doing the thing. Also, no, but I see where you were going with that, right? And then a few verses after that, there's an encounter. This is one Pastor Vadim was talking about where John in particular and his brother, you know, these sons of thunder, they offer to Jesus a solution. And their solution is, Jesus, do you want us to bring the fire from heaven? As if like Jesus doesn't have the connection, right? Like, but, and their solution is, do you want us to bring the fire from heaven? And that way we can have like a literal people roasting, right? And so more than one occasion, John is recorded as being a part of like this rejection for the sake of Jesus is what he thinks is a rejection. And then he has to relearn this lesson to accept the group of believers that he has been a part of rejecting for the actual sake of Jesus. So again, I think Jesus is probably like with the disciples over and over again. Yeah, I think I saw what you guys were doing there. Also, we got a lot to learn. We're gonna keep going, okay? We're gonna just muscle through.
But today, John and Peter, they have a different task. And not all of the Gospels mention who this task is given to. Some of them just refer to the disciples, and Jesus asked the disciples. But in Luke, it's pretty specific that the task was given to John and Peter to prepare, to go and prepare for the Passover meal. Okay, in chapter 22, verse 8, if you want to follow along, Jesus sent Peter and John saying, "Go and make preparations for us to eat the Passover." Where do you want us to prepare for it? They asked. And he replied, okay, as you, he doesn't say okay, I added that. He replied, "As you enter the city, a man carrying a jar of water will meet you. Follow him to the house that he enters and say to the owner of the house, 'The teacher asks, where is the guest room where I may eat the Passover with my disciples?' And he will show you this large room upstairs, all furnished. Make preparations there." And then they left, and they found the things just as Jesus told them, and so they prepared the Passover. What stands out to me over and over again as I was reading these verses was this reply that they're asking Jesus for instructions, because, you know, they're fully acquainted with the process of this Passover meal. And yet there is this moment where we can identify that even as much as they've been with Jesus, the disciples still have uncertainties and they still need clarification sometimes. And Jesus, always being this consistent, patient lover, gives both Peter and John really specific details for what they're going to be preparing for. And each one of Jesus' details of action and process, all of it always comes with purpose and function. And none of it is ever lacking a reminder for the purpose of discipleship. So it's as if Jesus is teaching them that even as they are preparing for this meal that they always prepare for every year it comes, their task in this preparation, they're still learning who they are and defining who they are as disciples. And when he's given them these instructions to find this place, he wants them to look for the most unlikely characters. So pay attention to the details, he says, and allow for the characters that you're going to see. Maybe this is like another movement of Jesus. How is it that they're going to serve you, this unlikely character, and that this will teach you then something about service? So they must follow these instructions. And the scenario is this. There's a man that's carrying a jug of water. And why is this odd? Because traditionally, this would have been the work and a task done by a woman, right? And I wonder, Jesus is trying to prime their eyes to see the things that Jesus wants them to be able to see. And here's the practice of how to do that. And then their location was not this like fancy, hidden away, exotic place. No, it was actually this common location that was accessible to really anybody. It was a room upstairs in a building, and it was often set apart for like special occasions that any person could rent. It's like going up to the youth room. It's nice. It's totally nice. But it's not the sexiest room. It's not like, you know what I'm saying? I'm not mad about it. I'm just saying it could be accessible to anybody, right? So it was just a common room where the people went and they gathered. And was he trying to tell the disciples something else in this process too? Think about the space that we're going to be in. It's not necessarily a special place that we need to go, but rather the special place happens once the people that are gathered inside is what makes this place special. So I wonder if it became clear to John and Peter as they were walking to this place that Jesus described. And I wondered, what would the conversation have been like? What would it have been like? What were they thinking about as they were walking towards the thing that Jesus was telling them to do? Did they plan the seating chart? Do you know what I'm saying? Were they like, okay, John, you're going to sit over here, and Peter, you're going to be over there, and I think Judas, we're going to put him right here, right? I mean, this is an artistic interpretation from an artist, right? And then, like, Pastor Anthony, like, throws in a remix last week and then shows us a different diagram, and I'm just like, I don't know. Who knows where everybody sat? Maybe they played musical chairs in between all of it, right? But was it them? Was it, you know, Peter and John, did they plan the seating chart? Did they know what Judas was going to be up to? Did they expect to be served in the way that they were served and feel this incredible amount of love, even after all of the love and goodness that they had received. I wondered that. No, but I have to be honest, as I was thinking this week and wondering about John's process of preparation, you know, I wondered and I thought, you know what? I'm not really good at following directions. In fact, I have a lot of challenges with it. So I'm gonna need you to like hold me close here because I'm gonna make some confessions and you can't judge me afterwards, right? So I can relate to this needing for clarifying of like instructions, because I always have like this rogue streak when somebody tells me to do something. I'm always like, I mean, that's not the only way you can do it. Like, there's other ways, right? Like, and as a kid, I was always this way, right? My mom was like, do it this way. And I was like, I mean, I could try it another way. And she'd be like, well, I need you to do it this way. And I'd be like, I'm going to try it my way, right? And it was unnecessary. I mean, it's, you know, looking at this, most of the times when I pushed back and I challenged, there was no need. It was like, it's like, this is how you cook rice, Bev. Just do the way that we do it, because that's how you do it, right? But it does help me remember that actually cooking and baking are a really good example for how I pretend that I actually know what I'm doing in the kitchen, and that I just throw a whole bunch of stuff, and then I'm like, this is going to be great. It's going to wow somebody's palate, right? And I want to pretend like I know all of the things, but I don't ever do the work to actually know how to cook like real people cook, right? I don't spend the time doing the research. I don't spend the time taking the classes. I don't do any of those things. In fact, there is probably one time in my life in the last 6 years that I learned to cook, and that's during our Christmas for the Classics. And so if you're in the 55 plus club, it's really good to be 55 at this church, like 100%. I know, Kelly, but it's really good. Why? Because we gather together once a year and we make from scratch this incredible menu that is delicious. It's the one time I learn how to cook and that things in the kitchen actually have function and purpose, right? So I'm really thankful to our rabbi and our chef, Pastor Chris, because she opens my eyes to what baking and cooking are actually supposed to look like. And, you know, it's, first of all, it's not nearly as simple as TV makes it look like, okay? It's not. Even using a cheese grater, somebody can die. You got to be careful. And I'm always 100% unprepared to bake anything. Chris always sends out an email and she goes, bring these things from your kitchen. It'll help us prep. And I'm always like, I don't have any of those things. I have a knife and I didn't know it was for paring, but now I do. I'm going to bring that, right? And this week, the most fantastic thing happened in terms of cooking and baking to remind myself about this preparation process. Chris comes and she brings this glorious thing that she's made into our staff meeting. And there's these two baked loaves and they're just beautiful. And she brings them in and they're just like cake from heaven. It's manna, you know, it's good. And my jaw drops when she says, just tell me what it's like. I just started throwing a whole bunch of stuff into a bowl. And I was like, what? This came out of your stuff throwing into a bowl project, right? Because I remember, and I'm like, there is nothing in the world that I could throw from my kitchen into a bowl that one would taste good, that would be edible at all, right? I'm never gonna do that to you. I'm never gonna try to cook for you. Let's just put that there. And two, that would look as pretty as that did, right? There was preparation. She knows things about the kitchen. She knows things about baking. And it also made me think of the Passover as we're preparing for this Last Supper. And it made me want to know why in the world we eat stale bread during Passover. And do you know why? Well, it was the first time that I realized that the reason that we eat unleavened bread is because the people of Israel, when they were leaving Egypt, it was such a hurried time that they didn't have time to grab anything other than their flour. They just grabbed what was important and then they went. And so they didn't grab any of the rising agents, any like yeast or goodness that came with it. So when they got out to the desert, they had to mix the flour and the water and then they let it bake in the sun and it would make this toasty, not so delicious cracker-like bread. That's it, right? So in essence, we eat this bread because the Israelites weren't on their meal prep game. That's it. That's where we're at, right? And I wondered and I was like, well, you know what? If Chris Oberg would have been at the Exodus and she would have been there, we probably would be eating angel food cake, for communion. And that's what I'm praying for, like a newness of that, right? But so that's real, but I am the person that wants all of those things. And in some ways, we all kind of have this inner part of us. We want these experiences, but we don't necessarily know how to do the preparation or the work to get us there. And it strikes me that a lot of the Christian experience, at least in some ways, for me, it has been a tough mixture of all of that. I want to be faithful, but I don't want to do all of the things that faithful people commit to doing. I want to be a follower of Jesus, but I don't want to accept all of the things that Jesus accepted, right? I want to love the people of God, but I don't want to do it at the inconvenience of my personal time, my personal space, and the inconvenience of my family's time and space, right? I want to do those things, but I really want to. And so many times, like, we want to embody this life of God for the human experience, but it's tough and inconvenient, right? All of our moments are surrounded like this. I want everybody to be a good driver, but I'm the angry driver on the 91 who's gonna yell at you for not using your clicker. Like, use your clicker. But I want peacemaking, but I don't know how to be a peacemaker, right? And I think that stood out for me this week, in particular thinking about John because of his perspective. John and Peter actually do what Jesus asks them to do. Even with a questioning within them, they do the thing that Jesus tells them to do. They ask about where and how, and then Jesus delivers and gives them the where and the how. Here's what you need to do. And it makes it so that John and Peter don't necessarily have to overthink or overfunction in their purpose as disciples for Jesus, because Jesus has given them the how and the what to do. He says X, Y, and Z, and then the rest, Jesus fills in the gaps. Jesus doesn't say, plan the program for our Passover meal. Jesus says, you need to do these things, and I will fill in the rest of the gaps for our experience together. And they didn't try to bargain with Jesus about location or why he had picked a man who would be doing a woman's job, like just messing with the norm of things. They didn't question why we would be having such a special meal in such a common place. You know, and I wondered, is this part of what it's like when you have kind of messed up in the past before and now this is you relearning this experience? Had they prepared all of those moments of stumbling, preparing them? And then they prepare because they follow in line with the things that Jesus asked them to do. They prepare this place, and something holy, really holy and sacred, happens for all of them because two people committed to preparing the way that Jesus wanted them to prepare. And I imagine that before we can prepare physically a space for something holy and for the Holy One, in our lives, we also have to be able to prepare and be present in our lives first. And we have to commit in our hearts and in the places where we're used to keeping Jesus at bay. Like, we have to dig in deep into those places as we join this process of preparation. And Jesus saw that this exact thing, this living as a citizen of God's kingdom, is really a deeply profound personal experience. And at the same time, it's something that we actually show up and we do together. Even Judas, as we heard about last week, in spite of what would transpire after the supper, he showed up and he was there, a part of this process and this story. So Jesus brings me this week to confess and to think about a couple of things. And so I'm going to leave you with these, and I wonder if you would allow maybe for you to think about your process. For me, one, I don't have it all together. I don't have it all together. No matter how Christian-y or religious I am, I have a lot more untogether than I do together. And I learned that from John's sitting at the table and him figuring his own stuff out. Two, that even in all of my confidence, in whatever it is that I have confidence, I always need to check in that my priorities match the priorities of Jesus. That's a non-negotiable, and that's something that I feel John, as he sits and reorganizes, does. 3, I have to be weary that I don't get caught up in the preparation of stuff because I forfeit the preparation of my own heart when I just worry about the things that are in front of me, and that I forfeit the opportunity to share something sacred and holy with the people around me when I'm so bent out of shape or just focus on the stuff in front of me. 4, being a citizen of God's kingdom is something that I have to actually prepare for every single day. It's not a one and done. I talk about this with the kiddos that I baptize and I do Bible studies with. After we dunk you in the water and you come out, this isn't the last time that we practice giving our heart and our mind and our soul to the Holy One. We're going to do this tomorrow, but there's going to be no water. Right? And I have to do this over and over again every day. And I have to practice seeing the things that Jesus wants me to see the way that he wants me to see them and not the way that I want to see them, right? I have to practice making room for things that Jesus makes room for. And I have to expect that I'm going to be really bad at it at first. That I'm going to be really bad at it until I'm not as bad at it, right? And I think that John was. I think he experienced a lot of, I think I'm really good at this, and then Jesus was like, we're going to try again. And I feel like that's going to be something that I have to be doing over and over in my experience. But that I can expect this, that Jesus is always going to be ready for me in my struggle, and that Jesus is already has plan and instruction because Jesus has already a purpose in mind, not just for me as an individual, but for us as the people of God. And last, the preparation for a life with Jesus is not something that I ever do alone. While it is an individual experience and something that happens deeply within me, I can only control the ways that my emotions react and come into the world. It is something that I do in communion with all of you. It's something that John prepares this place, and he shows up, and it's not just for him, it's for all of the disciples. And not just his generation of disciples, but for all of the people afterwards who would do this sacred practice and receive from Jesus. We learn this as a community. We don't ever do it together. Kingdom living, it really does happen in community. So when we come to the table, we have to think about where have we been? Can you reflect on that this week? Where have you been this week? What have you been doing? What have you been making your priorities? Because the things that you have been giving your attention to, those are the things that matter to you this week. And we say that those things are our priorities, but once they take second seat, then we have realized that they're not our priorities. So for you, what have you need to reflect on this week? Where have you been, and how have you been receptive in preparation for what the Holy One has for us? And all of these sacred moments, are we going to open ourselves to be ready for what the Holy One has to offer us? And my sense is that if we pay attention, Jesus is in front of us giving us instructions, and that something really good and sacred is going to happen on the other end of Jesus' words, because they always do. Amen.